this. You, me, seventh grade geometry, what comes to mind?
Considering I'm from California and you're from Florida, probably confusion first, and then fear, then confusion again.
While math was my worst enemy, I did learn a little something about tangents and how I love to go on them. Speaking of which, did you see the Marvel?
Good evening, I'm Nick Song.
And I'm Maria Jimena Aragon. You're listening to Tangential NU.
Wait, you guys were talking about tangents in seventh grade? I wasn't talking about tangents till like high school. What are you talking about?
Okay, that's Zach McCrary. He's producing.
Man behind the scenes.
Yeah. But anyway, this is WNUR 89.3 FM HD1, Evanston, Chicago. So if you tuned into any of our past broadcasts, you'll notice we talk about Northwestern a ton. It's to be expected. I mean, we're called WNUR for a reason. And as a result, we tend to use a lot of vernacular that makes sense to people who are on campus.
But doesn't make sense to people who aren't.
So words like tech.
Or the Lakeville.
Or Caesar.
Morty.
NUDM.
CESPE.
Plex.
PA Groups.
Dillo.
Norbucks.
Hippopotamus.
SPAC. Wait, hippopotamus?
This is all to say we often take what we say at Northwestern for granted. Words, after all, do have meaning. So today we're going to take a step back from NU and think about what those other meanings are.
Like the garage. Garages hold more than cars. They've been the site of dramatic innovation in recent years.
Apple and Amazon come to mind.
Exactly. Our reporter Margot Amial reports about the folklore of garages within entrepreneurial history. A story about garages. No, not the garage, just garages.
Garage, you might picture a minivan parked in the suburbs, or bikes packed behind a mini fridge, or you may imagine a group of entrepreneurs huddled behind a desk, feverishly coding. From WNUR News, you're listening to our special broadcast, Tangential NU. We are airing stories that tangentially relate to Northwestern. This story, if you are curious, is not about the garage. Yep, not that one. Many key businesses that have defined our lives in the late 20th and 21st centuries were founded in garages, including Walt Disney, Google, Amazon, and Apple. Garages, as a result, have become symbolic of the quintessential American dream story of scrappy to successful. However, one garage story stands out in particular.
Like the story, when people started telling the story of Apple, came through a garage. They would hold their first business meetings in a garage. They would go to these various pitch meetings on campus and pitch what they're doing, and then they'd go back to their garage.
That was Kellogg Adjunct Lecturer of Marketing, Birju Shah. Shah currently leads Uber Health, which leverages Uber's on-demand network to more efficiently move people, workers, and goods to medical facilities.
To me, it was Apple. Apple made it all popular, and it became a thing for everybody. And so, I think, a lot of people looked up to Steve Jobs. And, I look up to Steve Jobs. Everyone looked up to Steve Jobs, right? And, whether he was, a good person or a bad person, it was just, from a startup mindset standpoint and beautiful products that he built, or he directed with his team, it was kind of like that became the rite of passage. If Steve did it, you have to do it, right?
Professor Shaw himself was deeply inspired by Jobs when he first heard the story.
My initial visceral reaction is I want to do it. And then I remember going with one of my companies and going into a garage in Palo Alto and be like, yeah, I'm talking up to the landlord. And I'm like, this sucks. I was like, it's humid, which is never humid in California in that area. I was like, I feel like there's bugs in the corner there. And I'm just like, and I feel like you're trying to charge me too much for your garage. And I'm just like, but I remember when I first heard the story, I was just visually on every level. I was like, this is awesome. This is someone that built one of the largest and best companies in the world with the best products that we use from a garage. And they did everything from this one little room in kind of the middle of nowhere. And it made me feel like I can build something great with such little resources.
Why exactly did budding entrepreneurs like Jobs and others, particularly those living in the Bay Area, decide to use garages as workspaces?
And the reason it became popular was because most of the houses there to rent were actually still expensive. They've always been expensive relative, right, to where you are in the market.
The average rent for a one-bedroom apartment in San Francisco is one of the highest in the country, at nearly $3,000 a month. Founders would conduct all their normal business operations from garages.
There, I remember in the 80s, you would invite the venture capitalists to the garage when you were fundraising. And then they'd almost judge you on how crappy your garage was. in the sense of like, is there water leaking? Like, are you guys on one table? Is there oil on the floor? And they'd be like, all right, these are real startup folks.
Some landlords even secure jobs from renting out their garages. The CEO of YouTube, Susan Wojcicki, rented out her garage to Google's founders in 1998. She then started as employee number 16 at Google when it was just a young search engine and rose through the ranks from there. But the mystique of the garage, according to Professor Shaw, is fading.
Right. In the last decade, it's really been people going to these co-working spaces, and a lot of venture capitals, they now have like space for startups to work in. It's not the greatest, right? Because like you miss out on that story of like working hard and working out of the garage.
Another reason for the shift is the increase in a work-from-home culture. Fortune magazine reported on April 1st that about 25 to 35% of workers are currently working from home. This is furthering the trend away from garage culture. But Professor Shaw is hopeful that the garage story may come back. Shaw said that he believes the mass amounts of money that have been funneled into startups in recent years will diminish in this new decade.
I think garage culture is going to come back. Like, just the culture, the mindset. I don't know if actual garage will come back, but I think the culture and the mindset is going to come back, where founders are going to be really scrappy. They're going to be the tougher founders. They're going to be the founders that have to do more with less. And they're going to have to be able to have kind of this very close-knit culture with their fellow founders or first team members, and have that experience of kind of going through hardship to launch their company. I hope it goes back to like being in a garage, but I think that mindset's going to be there.
Regardless of the future of garages, this folklore has been pivotal to defining entrepreneurial culture in the past decade and has inspired generations of founders, and most likely many to come. Reporting for WNUR News, I'm Margo Muell.
Maria, what's your favorite kind of rock?
Igneous, duh.
Incorrect. The correct answer is sedimentary.
That's not how that question works.
The Rock is one of Northwestern's most recognizable landmarks. It's this ginormous boulder that's at the heart of campus. You can't walk to class without seeing it, so it's become something of a billboard. Student organizations, they paint different colors and messages on it. It's a constantly changing but steady presence in all of our lives. It got reporter Sarah Cadora thinking about another inspiring rock. Here's the story.
So I'm sitting at the Rock. It's a Friday. It's about 10 a.m. It's kind of overcast. It feels like it's gonna rain. The forecast says it's not, but it feels like it's going to. There's not too many people. Like I said, it's a Friday, so not the busiest day for classes. Today, the Rock is painted bright green with blue and yellow and pink and orange details. And the club that is advertising today, I think, is called Spoon. In big black letters on the green rock, it says Spoon Fest Friday Deering. Oh, there's an interested students group walking past me now. So as you might be able to hear, the tour guide is explaining some history of the Rock. Apparently, it's been here since 1902. I had no idea. Those were some of my musings from Northwestern's Rock. As that tour guide so breathlessly explained, the Rock is a quintessential NU landmark. Sitting just beyond the arch, outside University Hall, an actual rock sits buried beneath layers and layers and layers of paint. 10 inches, according to the tour guide. Campus groups like clubs, dorms, and activists regularly add a fresh coat to promote their org, spread a message, or to just do the Northwestern thing. Even through Evanston winters, you can expect to notice a new version of The Rock at least once a week. Redesigned, reimagined, but still the ever-present Rock. And it got me thinking about another notable Rock.
If you smell what The Rock is cooking.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson was born in Hayward, California on May 2nd, 1972. His mom is the daughter of Peter Maiva, a pro wrestler of the legendary Anoa'i family. His dad, Rocky Johnson, was part of the first Black Champion tag team in World Wrestling Federation history. Johnson first body slammed his way into our hearts on November 17, 1996, in his first match for WWF, which later rebranded to WWE. Even though he was billed as a heel, that's wrestling talk for a villain, audiences cheered him on for most of his career. He won 10 world championships and several other titles in his time with the company, rising to the heights of fame pro wrestling could offer, which prompted a certain late-night show to offer him a hosting gig.
Ladies and gentlemen, The Rock!
I've had a great time this week. I gotta admit, it was a little hard for me. Thank you. I gotta admit, it was a little hard for me at first because I'm not used to working with such small people.
Johnson credits that SNL appearance in 2000 with propelling his Hollywood career, which, to say the least, quickly exceeded his WWF stardom. According to Forbes, Dwayne Johnson is the highest paid actor and the fourth highest paid entertainer of 2022, behind only Jay-Z, Bruce Springsteen, and Peter Jackson, the Lord of the Rings director.
What can I say except you're welcome? For the tides, the sun, the sky.
Box office hits like Moana and Jumanji made him one of the highest paid actors of all time, while criminally underrated roles like the Tooth Fairy kept him endearing. Depending which corner of the internet you believe, Dwayne Johnson is either worth $320 million or $800 million. Either way, the 50-year-old dad of three isn't just cashing in on acting credits anymore. From energy drinks to TV producing, from buying a whole football league to starting a bodybuilding competition. According to Forbes, Johnson's tequila brand is actually responsible for the lion's share of his 2022 earnings.
For the islands I pull from the sea, there's no need to pray, it's okay, you're welcome. I guess it's just my way of being me. You're welcome, you're welcome.
At this point, The Rock is a brand in a league of its own. Arguably, no one has enjoyed more mainstream success in as many lanes of the business world. Yet he feels so relatable, lovable even, like a conventionally attractive, effortlessly funny, fiercely protective dad who you just know would put on a tutu to save his daughter's ballet recital. See 2007's The Game Plan. Here's a 2021 interview with Vanity Fair.
What's your name?
My name is Dwayne Johnson, also known as The Rock, La Roca, Uncle Handsome, Sexiest Man Alive. I have a lot of names. Asshole sometimes.
What are you obsessed with right now?
That's a good question. Right now, I am obsessed with building things. With my own two hands. I'm obsessed with building brands and businesses. And I'm also obsessed with being a great father and being a really great daddy to my babies and a great father to my three daughters. I am obsessed with that.
No matter which hat he's wearing, Dwayne Johnson manages to stay approachable. A steady, ever-changing, yet consistent presence in our lives. Kind of like our Rock. For WNUR News, I'm Sarah Cadora.
I love The Rock. That man can act. He can sing.
I left my heart in San Francisco. Hey, Maria, weren't you in San Francisco last quarter?
Yes, I was part of the Bay Area Immersion Program for Medill. I went on hikes, drank a lot of boba, signed an NDA.
But did you find a bay in the bay?
Enough about that. The real question we're asking here tonight is, love truly blind? Reporter Helen Bradshaw sets us two people looking for love in her basement in hopes that they can one day be hashtag bagels. Roll the tape.
Most students will agree that winter quarter in Evanston is hard. Temperatures consistently range below 30 degrees Fahrenheit and often into the teens. But in San Francisco, the average high temperature in January is nearly 30 degrees higher than in Evanston. That's why, in addition to the academic opportunities, San Francisco attracts undergraduate students each winter quarter for the Bay Area Immersion Program. This one-quarter program merges technology and media in an alternative to a cold, regular quarter on campus.
It was pretty good.
That's May Herrieta, a Medill junior who went on the Bay Area Immersion Program in winter of 2022. But other than the name, this story has nothing to do with the program. It does, however, have everything to do with finding love. The word bay, spelled B-A-E, not B-A-Y, gained national recognition, primarily for the first time by non-black people, around 2014. But the term, like many words identified as slang, originated several years earlier, particularly in the dialects of Southern black communities, as a shortened form of the word babe. In fact, much of the language viewed as slang, like bestie, extra, woke, and slay, originated with the dialect of black femmes and African-American vernacular English. While much of white America may have only started to become familiar with the term in the 2010s, its documented origins were years earlier. In addition, bae was and has been often misattributed to a general youth or the internet. While social media has made terms circulate to unimaginable scopes, words that originated as a part of dialects, including bae, are often divorced from their queer black origins, as seen with bae being mistakenly thought to be an acronym for before anyone else. In a study published in 1997, psychologist Arthur Aaron and other researchers determined a methodology for fostering intimacy between strangers in experimental studies. The answer? 36 questions to fall in love. The process? Ask a stranger these 36 questions, followed by 4 minutes of direct eye contact. The result? The Bay Area Immersion Project. I sent out a message to our Slack at 5 p.m. on Monday. Okay, so who has single friends I can set up for the special broadcast? At 5:57 p.m., arts and entertainment editor Maria Camagno.
I have convinced my roommate.
And it so turns out that I too had convinced my roommate. So with that, meet your blind date contestants.
Hi, my name is Natalia. I'm 20 and I'm looking for my wildcat connection.
Hi. I'm Sawyer Sad. I go by he, him, his pronouns, and I'm looking for love.
Now, when I say blind date, I mean no seeing each other whatsoever. Not beforehand, not when they walk in, and not during the date, until the last 4 minutes of direct eye contact. I wanted to see if these scientifically studied questions could truly lead to love without taking into account physical appearance. But at the end of the day, I didn't want to give them nothing, so I plugged in fairy lights and poured some non-alcoholic sparkling cider into glittery plastic flutes donated from the remnants of a 21st birthday party. I should, however, mention that this was still taking place inside executive producer Sarah's basement. I had hoped the Ratatouille soundtrack I was playing would transport them to Paris in their minds.
It's a basement in here for sure. There's some cool paintings on the walls.
With a sheet hanging on a water pipe over a pong table to block their view, our contestants sat down, for now, as strangers, but hopefully also as soon-to-be lovers. Natalia arrived and Maria and I guided her down to the date, anticipating that sparks could be flying at any moment.
This is exciting.
Yeah, I feel like I've never done this before and I will never do this again.
What?
No, like in the sense that I feel like this opportunity will never present itself again.
I don't know. I feel like the people I'm surrounded by do things like this a lot. And by the people I'm surrounded by, I think I mean Helen.
Yeah. Murray is the same.
Okay, cool, cool. Okay. Should we, how do you feel about names? Should we say names? Should we keep it a secret?
I don't know. What, how do you feel?
I'm wondering if we've ever met before, because I feel like there's a big possibility that we, wait, what, am I allowed to ask, like, what year are you?
Yeah, I'm a junior.
Me too.
Okay. I asked Maria, I was like, do I know him? And she was like, I don't think so.
Okay. Right, we'll keep it a secret.
Okay, sounds good. We'll say our names. Either before or after we stare into each other's eyes.
Performance. Yeah. Performance. No more, no less.
Okay. Should we get started with these questions?
Yeah. Would you like to be famous in what way?
I feel like I wouldn't like to be famous. I don't know, like, I feel like there's so much pressure that comes with it, and, like, it's, I like, looking at celebrities, like, they have to have, like, a professional, like, public persona and then a private persona, and it just seems so exhausting.
I was watching this TikTok earlier this morning, or maybe it was something on Instagram, of like the Johnny Depp trial thing that's going on with Amber, and like somebody was literally getting like a wristband to go see the trial, and she was treating it like it was a concert, and I was like, this is a trial about abuse. That's gotta be so, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's like a horrible thing about being famous. Like, you're on trial for this thing. It's really traumatizing, and people are treating it like it's some like roller coaster.
Yeah. Would you like to be famous?
I don't think famous. I wouldn't want to be like celebrity famous. Mm-hmm. I think it would be nice. Like, I like to make art. And if my art got recognition and I had like, you know, I had stuff in a gallery sort of on a smaller scale, I think that would be fun, but I don't think I would want something where I have like fans or I don't want to have something where I have to make my private life private on purpose, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know, some of these are either really like deep or really
I think they're supposed to go from like least deep to most deep,
but like one of them, like number 7.
Is that you asking number 7?
No. I mean, unless you really do know.
I mean, I feel like everyone has a secret hunch, right? I have, okay, question being, do you have a secret hunch about how you will die? Mm-hmm. I feel like most likely I'm just gonna do something really stupid that's gonna result in my death. Like, I'm gonna slip and fall and then just like die. I don't know. Or I'll be like rock climbing and I'll just fall or something.
Do you go rock climbing a lot?
No. Which is why I think I would fall and die, because I would go I would go rock climbing one time, because I would be like, try everything once, right?
Yeah.
And then in that one time, I think I would die.
I don't know if I have a hunch of how I would die. I would like to die peacefully in my sleep, but like when I'm old.
You can manifest that into a hunch, right? You can just be like, if you want to die peacefully in a home, maybe that's just your hunch.
Okay, this is me manifesting that I die peacefully in a home.
If you knew that in 1 year you would die suddenly, would you change anything about the way you are now living and why?
If I knew I only had a year, I don't think I would like stay in school.
Yeah.
Just because like, I don't, what's the point? I think I would definitely like try to travel and like spend time with like my friends and family, just because I feel like that's like where I got like the most joy from, or just like, I don't know, like I feel like, I don't know if I would like, I like value experiences more than like in like objects, if that makes sense. And so like I would definitely try to have as many like experiences that like I enjoy, or just like, I also like having like days where I don't do anything and just kind of like and by myself. So I would also try to have those.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's like what I would try to do. I don't know. What would you do?
I don't know. That was such like a nice heartfelt answer. I feel like my answer was not going to be nearly as heartfelt. I was going to say I was going to stop like, or not stop. No, yeah, stop. I was going to stop stopping myself from doing things. Like, I feel like I get very nervous about you know, what if I make something but it's not good enough? So then that thought is what prevents me from starting something.
Oh.
And I would probably stop doing that to myself, and I would just start doing all of those things that I have like floating around in my mind. Mm-hmm. Even though I don't know how much stuff I would actually do. For the record, I would also love to spend time with family and friends. I feel like that would also be good. That would also be fun.
Don't talk to anyone. I would never, I would never thought of asking these questions.
They're good questions, though.
Yeah.
Share with your partner an embarrassing moment in your life. Sorry to ask you the question.
Let me think. I guess, in high school, I was in band in high school, and I played the oboe.
Awesome.
Yeah. I played the oboe.
That's sick.
And then I played the saxophone in marching band. But
okay.
In high school, so going back to the public high school, we did not have enough funding to buy the copyrights for our fall play. So the director wrote one.
Oh.
And so it was like Henry the Eighth, like Star Wars themed.
No.
So
no.
And so I was, they like asked a bunch of like people in band to be in the Cantina band.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so I was in the Cantina band, but they made us wear like alien masks, like bright green, like alien mask, and we had to like cut a hole so we could like play our instruments.
Whoa, okay.
So yeah, it was just, there's like pictures out there somewhere probably of me wearing this playing my oboe.
That's awesome.
But yeah, that's probably like one of my embarrassing moments.
That was a flex. That's not
it's
embarrassing.
Not.
That's so cool.
These are all about dying.
I can't believe it gives you a hypothetical about your house catching on fire.
Or if everyone in your family died, which one would be the worst?
Like, that's horrible. Okay. I can't answer that one. What if my parents listen to this? what if anyone in my family listens to this?
Yeah, no, we won't be answering that one.
We won't. Also, am I allowed to ask your name now?
Yeah, I'm Natalia.
Natalia, okay.
What's your name?
It sounds kind of familiar, I'll be honest. I feel like my name is complicated. I go by Sad, but my first name is Sawyer.
I feel like you've taken a class together.
Did you take like Latino studies?
Did you take like
yeah,
Latino
I did,
studies
I did.
As freshman year?
I definitely did with
John Mark.
Yes, with John Marquez. Yeah.
Maria said, "No, don't wait for us. Start." She just said, "Should we walk in?" Or do you guys want to let us know when you're done?
Okay, yeah.
Let them
I can
know.
Think of
them.
Okay.
Sorry, Louie. Helen's sheets.
Okay.
Oh. So good to see you.
Hi.
So good to see you.
Should I sit the
Yeah.
Okay.
Foreign seems like a lot.
I know. Are we still?
Should we ask a safe word?
For what? For when we want to leave?
I don't know.
Okay.
And just like that, the date was already over.
Would you say you're in love?
I would say we're in love.
Would you say you're in love?
Yeah. Okay.
So it worked?
Score. Yeah, I would say I proposed question 8. So.
Okay. Awesome.
I don't know if they said that just to make me feel better about my matchmaking abilities or not, but I do know that immersing them in a dark basement with nothing to do but stare at my pink floral sheets and answer these 36 questions for an hour and a half brought them closer. As lovers, I can't say, but hopefully at least as friends. For WNUR News, I'm Helen Bradshaw.
Well, so here at WNUR News, we actually have our special guest here in the studio, our reporter Helen, and half of the date with Natalia. How did you guys feel did the story and just, you know, this blind date, Nat?
It was interesting to listen back at the recording of it. I've never listened to a date before of my own. But it was a fun experience. It was very cute. Helen really outdid herself with the setup. So yeah,
I also had a lot of fun, especially listening to my roommate, because I feel like I hear about him going on dates a lot, but I can never tell if he's exaggerating what he's saying. So now I have this to hold against him. And yeah, I mean, I am a nosy person, so it was wonderful to get to listen on it.
That's awesome. How long did it take to actually like set up everything?
We kind of ran into an issue because we were going to set up at 11. The date was at 12 and I was going to pick up tomate for both of them to make the date even more extravagant.
Oh, she said dedicated.
Yeah, in that basement. It was going to be so nice, but, they were closed. So at like 10 minutes before the date was supposed to start, me and my roommate dashed to Starbucks, picked up food and came back. So all in all, like, I don't know, 40 minutes maybe.
Wait, so for our listeners, you showed us a picture of the setup.
Right.
What did it look like?
So if you've never been to Sarah's basement, it's a lovely little space underground, as basements are. There was a pong table there that my roommate and his friends had painted the year before, and one of my bed sheets hung over a water pipe to block them from seeing each other, and they were just on like plastic chairs, and there was some plastic champagne flutes, and it was really dark.
Yeah. But let's not forget the Burger King sign in the background. Mm, yeah. Shout out to the Burger King house. Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you to everybody who supplied that amazing decor.
Yeah, but like, honestly, you know, in terms of romantic setups, it's definitely an acquired taste. But like, how Natalia, how did you feel about, you know, the whole the date itself and just like being in that, I guess, romantic area?
Yeah, I think it was a really fun experience. I've been on a blind date before, but I think this was definitely the best one I've been on. I think this is, I don't know, it was a really fun experience. It was a great setup. It was really interesting to go on a date and not see the person or know their name. And so I think that was like a really interesting perspective when it comes to relationships.
Thank you, guys. I felt so involved in this date. I'm going to listen to it over. Yeah. It was so awesome.
Also, as the last question, is there going to be a second date?
I don't know. We haven't reached out since then. But maybe. Maybe there will be. We'll see.
We'll leave it open.
Okay. Okay. You heard it here first. Now, Nick, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
This is the most important question I'm going to ask you.
What's up?
Are you a North Campus person or a South Campus one?
I think I'm more of a lies down and sleeps in the middle of Sheridan Road kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah. That kind of checks out.
Although I hear Willard Hall isn't too bad. It's a residential college on the south side of campus. Famous alumni like Julia Louise Dreyfus and Stephen Colbert have at one point called Willard home. But Willard is also the name of something else, a world-famous scientist who co-published an influential physics paper. But that scientist was a little less than human. Reporter Allison Rauch investigates.
Have you ever done something a little lazy in your academic career? I asked the staff of WNUR News, as well as some friends.
My name is Josh. I'm a second year, and the laziest thing I've ever done in my academic career is I would, in my third grade book response journal that had to be a page long each week, I would write a few sentences of plot summary, and then I would write, for my opinions, see last week's journal.
So I was taking this AP Bio class, and we would have bi-weekly lab experiments, and they basically had the same formatting. It was just different experiments every time. So I would just take the same one and just fill in the new information and replace the old one.
My name is Nick Song. I transferred into Northwestern last year. I have a ton of personal essays I've written as a result of the college process. You know, I still managed to copy and paste some quotes here and there that, you know, I managed to scavenge from those lost manuscripts, I guess.
I've never been good about doing readings, no matter how good the class is. So when we get to this final paper, I decide I'm not gonna rush through and try and read all these, you know, readings that I hadn't done before. I'm just gonna give my own political opinions, my own personal opinions about the climate crisis.
It happens to the best of us. We're rushing on an assignment or we're bored, so sometimes we cut corners. We phone it in. We make our cat the co-author of our physics paper. This is the story of FDC Willard. Willard, whose real name is Chester, was a renowned physicist, also a Siamese cat. In 1975, Professor Jack Hetherington of Michigan State University was studying low-temperature physics. He hoped to publish his research in the Physical Review Letters, a peer-reviewed scientific journal published by the American Physical Society. Hetherington finished up his paper and gave it to a colleague to review. There was just one problem. The colleague pointed out that Hetherington used we instead of I. The journal would reject the submission since Hetherington was the sole author. Now, it was the 1970s. You couldn't just find and replace. So instead of taking the time to retype his entire paper, Hetherington decided to invent a co-author. Enter Chester. Chester the cat had a father, a Siamese cat named Willard. So no problem, Chester Willard. But Hetherington was afraid his colleagues might recognize his pet's name, deciding to use initials instead. C. Willard it is. But since most Americans have two or more given names, he invented two more initials based on the scientific name for a house cat, Felis domesticus. Thus, F.D.C. Willard was born. Later that year, the Physical Review Letters published a paper entitled 2, 3, and 4 Atom Exchange Effects in Body-Centered Cubic Helium-3. Its authors were J.H. Hetherington and F.D.C. Willard. Willard's true identity quickly came out after people turned up at Michigan State asking to see the co-author. Hetherington has since leaned into the joke, sending copies of his paper to friends that included the paw prints of his co-author.
Yes, it just keeps going. I mean, it's like, who knew? Of course, the scandal, you're going to talk about the scandal. My wife admits to sleeping with both authors at the same time. So.
Willard has since been thanked in footnotes, published an article in French, and even offered a professorial post. But he's not the only animal to co-author a scientific paper. French immunologist Polly Matzinger listed her Afghan hound, a dog named Galadriel Mirkwood, as a co-author for a paper published in the Journal of Experimental Medicine. As author Ted Anton describes, Matzinger didn't want to write in the scientific passive voice. But she, like Hetherington, also didn't want to write in the first person. Seems like a simple enough solution. However, Matzinger's co-author caused more of a ruckus. Matzinger's work was banned from that journal until the editor passed away and was replaced with another. So if hotshot scientists can get away with it, maybe it's okay to do a little workaround every once in a while. Just as long as you remember to thank your co-authors. Which reminds me, this audio story was a collaboration with reporter Buster Rauch. For WNUR News, I'm Allison Rauch.
Hey, Nick, do you believe in conspiracies?
Well, just the normal ones. Area 51, Bigfoot, Jimmy Hoffa being buried beneath the Meadowlands.
What about the Medill Mafia?
You mean the alumni network? God, I hope so. That's half the reason I came to this school.
Well, from cults to conspiracies, Capitol Hill is a tough place to be, especially if you're a Bill.
Nope, that didn't land.
Okay, well, while some journalism students make their way to Washington, D.C. to report for the quarter, tonight, Catherine Odom reports on a very different hill, the Grassy Knoll, and the conspiracy theories it brought about.
I have the opportunity to spend one quarter in Washington, D.C. reporting on politics as a part of a program called Medill on the Hill. These students work as credentialed reporters on Capitol Hill and take classes for 10 weeks. That's not what we're talking about today, though. Today, I'm going to be reporting on a different hill, namely the Grassy Knoll in Dallas, Texas, where President John F. Kennedy was fatally shot on November 22, 1963. JFK was driving in a presidential motorcade with First Lady Jackie Kennedy, Texas Governor John Connally, and Texas First Lady Nellie Connally when he was shot and killed. Kennedy was speaking in 9 states in a week as he began preparing for the 1964 presidential election. Around noon, as the presidential motorcade drove through Dealey Plaza, Lee Harvey Oswald shot Kennedy in the head and neck from a window on the 6th floor of the Texas School Book Depository. Kennedy, Connally, and a spectator were all hit. Connally sustained serious injuries but survived.
President Kennedy has been the victim of an assassin's bullets in Dallas, Texas.
One of the most famous clips of film in American history, the Zapruder film, captured the moment from the Grassy Knoll in Dealey Plaza. Oswald fled the school book depository, and when police officer J.D. Tippett stopped him a few blocks away, Oswald shot and killed him. Soon after, the police arrested Oswald inside the nearby Texas Theater. Oswald denied involvement in the shootings. On November 24th, as he was being transported from the city jail to the county jail, Jack Ruby, a Dallas nightclub owner, shot and killed him. After the assassination, conspiracy theories about the shooting began to crop up. Some blamed a strange man holding a black umbrella, or claimed Oswald was acting on behalf of Cuba and Russia. Others said it was an inside job by the CIA, or the work of a rogue agent. Many alleged there was an additional shooter on the grassy knoll. Some even claimed the shooter was actor Woody Harrelson's father. And of course, there are also some really out there theories involving aliens and the Illuminati. The Warren Commission investigated the assassination for about a year, and according to the FBI, after 25,000 interviews and running down tens of thousands of investigative leads, the commission found Oswald acted alone in assassinating the president. Nearly 5 years after Kennedy was killed in Dallas, his younger brother, Robert F. Kennedy, was running for president. After he won the California primary, a man named Sirhan Sirhan fatally shot Kennedy in the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles.
Senator Kennedy has been shot. Is that possible?
Again, the assassination spawned a wide range of conspiracy theories. Some believed a suspicious woman in a polka dot dress was involved in the shooting, or that the bullet count indicated that there was a second gunman. One theory, the Manchurian Candidate hypothesis, claimed Sirhan Sirhan was psychologically programmed to commit the murder and was subsequently wiped of any memory of the incident. People have devoted their lives to proving their conspiracy theories about both of these assassinations. But to this day, there's been no conclusive proof of conspiracy in either shooting. So maybe the CIA ordered JFK's assassination, or maybe the woman in the polka dot dress was involved in RFK's. We'll probably never know for sure, though. But these conspiracy theories have become a part of the fabric of our history and culture, and they show how we look for explanations when faced with shocking and unprecedented events. We search for ways to make events like these a part of something bigger, whether that means blaming it on Soviet agents, alien invasion, or psychological programming. And even though we'll never know for sure, that definitely won't stop people from theorizing. Catherine Odom, WNUR News.
Okay, back in the studio, talking about conspiracy theories. Did you know, Nick, that Zach is from Vegas?
I did know that he's from Vegas.
And do you know what's in Vegas? Or near
Vegas?
Poker
chips? Oh, well, Area 51.
Of course.
That is correct. Area 51 is kind of outside Vegas. It's very close. It's, yeah.
Yeah, but while we were on break, Zach said something very wild and crazy. Do you want to repeat that for our listeners?
So, yeah, so my dad used to, he's a bus driver, and he used to drive a bus that goes to the test site where they tested things such as, like, atomic bombs and stuff like that. Science experiments and whatnot, you know, fun stuff.
So this is very timely, because in Congress they're doing, like, a lot of hearings of UFOs and stuff. Did he bring you back anything from Area 51?
I mean, you know. Every once in a while, a little something here, a little something there.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Listeners at home, you can't tell, but Zach is just violently blinking right now. You know, I think it's to signal something.
He has something he doesn't want to tell us.
Yeah.
But that's okay. We'll keep the secret. We'll keep the state secret.
It's all right.
Yeah. But, you know, we also want to talk to you more about kind of like this idea. We had a ton of ideas that just didn't make the cut. But we wanted to share some of them with you just because we think they're fun and, you know, we put all this time and work, and we just want to share that with you.
Yeah, this topic was a very collaborative one, so tangential and you kind of explaining everything but Northwestern. So one of the examples that I was telling people a lot was obviously what Sarah covered, the Rock being Dwayne The Rock Johnson. That's a good idea. And then also one that didn't get to air was Lake Michigan, talking about Lake Michigan.
Yeah, there was also, you know, talking about Northeastern University, obviously, you know, directional colleges, that's kind of our thing.
We also have the Arch.
The Arch, yeah, talking about the St. Louis Arch.
What else? Armadillos.
Right.
With Dillo Day being tomorrow.
Exactly, tomorrow.
I'm very excited for Dillo Day.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready to have fun, Nick, tomorrow?
Oh, I'm always ready to have fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's on the Lakeville. One of the ideas we had was thinking about how much stuff we can actually fit into Lake Michigan. A lot of geese, a lot of bath bombs, and so on.
Another idea we had were people named Bob. There's this affinity for Bob's here on campus with Bob's Pizza, Bob's Burgers, everything in between.
Right. There's also, you know, talking about our mascot, Willie the Wildcat. KSU, Kansas State University, also has a wildcat as their mascot. Additionally, High School Musical, of course, the Wildcats.
We also have another campus, not just in Evanston, but also in Qatar. So we could have also talked about that, too.
Yep. Also, the other, the NU versus NW debate over our acronym.
And also some very, very important names here on campus, such as McCormick. It's not only for whole brain engineering. It's also a name for spices.
Right.
You find in your kitchen cabinet.
There's also, the Deering Meadow, which is, not just a lawn. It's actually, you can stare at deer, I guess.
And then obviously the Wildcats with High School Musical, throwback to high school, elementary school when I was listening to it.
Exactly.
And also Evanston Township High School.
Oh, yes.
The Wildcats.
The Wildcats, the Wildcats were everywhere.
Yeah.
And then also Billy on the Street, Man on the Street. That's something that every Medill Northwestern student rite of passage. And we could have done Billy on the Street interview. Those are some of the ideas that we had for this special broadcast this year. And we just had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. I know I had a blast.
But yes, unfortunately, our time is up. And now here's where we get a little nostalgic. We've had an amazing year here at WNUR News, and we have some folks to thank.
Producer Zach, are you ready to roll some tape?
I sure am.
Our news directors are...
Alex Harrison.
And me, Nick Song. Our executive producer is...
Sarah Kodora.
Our campus local editor is me, Maria Jimena Aragon.
Our arts and entertainment editor is...
Maria Camaño.
Our oddities editor and our website editor is...
Helen Bradshaw.
Our diversity, equity, and inclusion chair is...
Simin Kim.
Our communications chair is...
Alice.
A man behind God. The scenes.
But our social media chair is
Allison Rauch.
And our incredible staff, the reporters, producers, and anchors who bring you 30 minutes of original content every single week.
Angelina Campanile,
Jonkna Sarah,
Paspal,
Catherine Odom,
Emily Zoe,
Margot Milanowski,
Ellie Skelly,
Olivia Lloyd,
Madison Bratley,
Delaney Nelson,
Jack Izzo,
Madison Smith,
Jordan Manji,
Seeger Gray,
Jungun Jennifer Kim,
Justine Fisher,
Izzy Perea,
Trevor Duggins,
Pari Pradhan,
Iris Swarthout,
Daniel Gross,
Emily Teutonio,
Ali Bianco,
Margot Amual,
Shafi Flunner,
Ella Gatlin.
For all of us here at WNUR News, thank you so much for listening.
We'll see you back here next week, Monday, same time, same place.